according to the police officer I spoke to, they went through a list of questions in order to ascertain whether or not she was safe and determined that she was okay to be on her own on the streets of Victoria, barefoot in November, and they left her there. That was the last time anyone ever saw her.
You are listening to Emma Filipov is Missing, an ongoing series by the Nighttime Podcast.
Welcome to the sixth part in an ongoing series covering the still unexplained disappearance of Emma Filipov. Emma was last seen on the evening of November 28, 2012, when she was questioned by two members of the Victoria Police Department. After spending roughly 45 minutes speaking with her, they determined she was not a threat to herself or anyone else, and she was left alone on a busy intersection in downtown Victoria, British Columbia. And there has not been another confirmed sighting of Emma ever since. If Emma's story is new to you, I suggest you start by listening to part one in this series and work your way up to here. It's far too complicated to possibly summarize in the introduction. All of my prior episodes, including those about Emma's story, are available at nighttimepodcast.com. For those of you who have been following the series, I want to thank you for your interest in this case and for telling others about Emma Filipov. The more people familiar with her face and the details of her disappearance, the better the chance her family will receive the answers they need. In this episode, the sixth part in the series, we will continue to hear those close to Emma share their experience and observations. To recap what we've heard so far, we spent the first two episodes with Emma's mother, Shelley, hearing the details of Emma's disappearance. Next, we met Julian, the man many had looked to as a suspect in her disappearance. In the fourth part, we were joined by Emma's lifelong friend Ellen, who generously shared her memories of the childhood spent with Emma. And in the most recent episode, part five, another of Emma's lifelong friends, Michaela, told us about her time living with Emma just after Emma's arrival to Victoria. Following a chronological order, we are next brought to tonight's guest. Shortly after Emma left the apartment, we heard Michaela describe sharing with her. For reasons unknown, Emma would first spend a period of time in the women's shelter, but this initial stay would be cut short when she meets tonight's guest and be offered a room in her apartment. The two would share this apartment for roughly 4 months and would stay close right up to Emma's disappearance. In an odd twist, tonight's guest is also named Michaela, just like Emma's prior roommate and our prior guest. However, she goes by the name Micah for an interesting reason.
You don't go by Michaela, you just go by Micah?
Yeah, bit of a thing. It actually has to do with Emma, weirdly enough.
How does that have to do with Emma?
She sometimes called me that.
And then it just stuck?
Yeah, it was something that I was just like, I will go by this until she's found kind of thing.
Tonight, we will hear from Micah, who will share her memories of her time living with Emma roughly 6 months prior to her disappearance in November of 2012. For any of you who've watched CBC's Finding Emma documentary, you may remember Micah from her appearance in the program. She was the friend wearing the cute hat. When I planned to speak to those close to Emma prior to her disappearance, Micah was someone I was very anxious to speak with. During Emma's time in Victoria, she seemed to have only two stable homes. The first was the one shared with Michaela, and the second is the one she shares with Micah. I contacted Micah and explained who I was and what I was doing, and of course invited her to speak to me. And luckily she was willing, but it was obvious and understandable that this is a very emotional topic for her. When speaking to her, at times, she laughed aloud at the great memories she shared with Emma, and at other times, we had to take breaks as she became so overcome by feelings of sadness and helplessness. What you'll hear in tonight's episode is my conversation with Micah. So with the introductions out of the way, let's get to the conversation. Our talk begins with Micah discussing how she and Emma first became connected. So, Micah, can you tell me how you first met Emma, and when was it that you first crossed paths with her?
When I first crossed paths with her, it would have been about November or like late November or December of 2011. A friend of mine was busking and she was just hanging out there. And so I went to say hi to my friend and we had friendly greetings. And Emma didn't really say much, but when I introduced myself, she was like, oh, my best like childhood friend is named Michaela. Like, what a coincidence. I was like, that's weird because of my best childhood friend or one of my best childhood friends is named Emma. And we like kind of giggled about that. And then our friend started playing music and busking more. And I had my sketchbook with me. And I drew a picture of her. That was my first encounter with her.
Very cool. And it was, I guess, about 4 months after that, that you ended up moving in together. When was that you moved in together?
That would have been February 2012, late February 2012.
What led to you moving in together? How did that start?
Well, I had a roommate who moved out. There was another person who was recommended to me who was looking for a place, and I introduced her to the landlord. She saw the house and she loved it. And I introduced her to the landlord, and the landlord thought she was fine, and she had been staying at the women's shelter. And I just instantly kind of jumped to the conclusion of, oh, well, you know, some people have to do what they gotta do to while they can't find a place, and housing in Victoria is ridiculous anyway, that whatever. And then after she was there for a short, like a few days, and she asked if her friend from the women's shelter could come and stay with us. And then it eventually evolved that girl left and Emma stayed because that girl that she invited was Emma.
Great. So the way it ended up working out is you had someone you knew from the women's shelter. They moved in with you. Then they brought their friend along who was Emma, who you had met, you know, a couple months prior.
When she was like, oh yeah, like I have my friend Emma, she's like really lovely, you'll really like her. And I was like, does she have really long braids? And like, does she look like this and this? And then she was like, yeah, she does. And I showed her the picture that I drew and I was just like, oh, whatever. Like that's crazy. Like what a serendipity. Yeah, like totally.
That's very cool. But you didn't have a relationship with Emma. You ran into her that one time and next thing you know, she's moving in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And just to put it in perspective, like when she was living with you, how much older is Emma than you are?
I was 19 at the time, 18, and then I turned 19. And she would have been 26.
Okay.
She would have just turned 26 because her birthday is in January. Mm-hmm.
Prior to Emma living with you, what did you know about her life? Like you knew she had been staying at the shelter with your, you know, the roommate that brought Emma along with her. Like what did you know about her life prior to living with you? And what details like about her life did she share with you?
She was very reserved about it, and she didn't seem like she wanted to share a lot, and I didn't pry. And that was, I think, how we became as close as we did, is because of I never pushed her into any sort of information. She told me about her family here and there, but it was never like a direct kind of answer. She was quite cryptic and poetic with a lot of her things, which just made me feel like, okay, like this, like she just needs her space and she can have it and that's fine. So.
Yeah, a prior roommate of Emma's, she described Emma talking about feeling drawn to Victoria and Emma having a belief that, you know, something important was going to happen there in Victoria. Did you ever hear Emma mention anything like that? Did she talk to you about why she was in Victoria?
I asked her a couple of times, but she mostly would answer like in a quite a cryptic and vague way, being like, oh, I just feel like I'm meant to be here. And like, she had that about her very much, is that she felt drawn to things. Like if she had an instinct to walk somewhere, then she was like, oh, that's what I need to do. I need to go to this place. And then she'd go there and like pick up a rock or something and then walk and be like, that was like kind of the purpose in a way. Like she never gave me a direct answer to why she was here, but she just said that she felt like she needed to be here.
And what was living with her like? Could you just describe kind of her behavior and, you know, and how she was passing the time at this point in her life?
Well, at first she was working at a cafe downtown and she opened the cafe. So she worked very early in the morning at around like 5 a.m. or so. Then after a while, and I've heard things about this cafe as well, that like the management isn't great and that it does have a very high turnover, and she was let go, and she was quite upset about it. She went into a bit of, like, not an admitted way of depression, but it seemed that way. But she was also quite a bit older than me, and I figured that she was just going through some stuff, and she liked to take very long baths. We paid for a lot of heating, a lot of hot water for those baths. And she didn't eat very much, but she would go for very long walks too.
Mm-hmm. As far as the long walks, I've heard about these quite a bit, because it seems like from a young age, you know, these walks that she would go on were a constant thing, and it seemed like they were getting longer and more frequent. At the point that she was living with you, was it like every night or every day that these long walks would happen?
It was always during the day. She did not like going out at night. She also admitted to me that she had she did not have very good vision. She didn't want to get contacts or glasses, and I have no idea if she ever had them in her past. And so she said at nighttime it was very difficult to see things. So it would always take place during the day that she would do that. Unless I was with her. Then if I was with her, then we'd go for a walk. But I didn't know for her to go out late by herself. Yeah, she described it to me, though, that she liked her world that way. Like, blurry. She described it to me as living life in a watercolor painting, which I thought was a positive way of looking at it.
Huh. Yeah, interesting way to think of it. And you mentioned her unusual eating habits, and I've heard about this as well from a prior roommate. Described Emma very particular about what she would eat, even avoiding things that grew on trees as an example of like an unusual eating habit. During the time that she was living with you, what was going on with her diet?
It was very unusual. It was very limited. She didn't eat any fruit. She believed that she was allergic to sugar. Nothing with sugar in it whatsoever, except for mustard. She would eat mustard, but only one very specific brand. Which I don't remember the name of. And she mostly ate popcorn, lots of popcorn. And I also figured that, like, since she told me that she was a trained chef, that she knew what she was doing, which seems silly.
So like for a meal,
she would eat like a huge bowl of popcorn. No vegetables. No fruit. She'd have this kind of soybean based thing as well. It's called tempeh. Mm-hmm. She'd eat that.
I'm just thinking like if your diet was that way, you would think you'd be really low on energy. Like, do you think it affected her health, or did you see any signs that this kind of diet affected her?
Yes, I did. She. Like, when she'd go on her walks, she would, like, tell me about, like, how sore she was. She'd take very long naps and long baths as well. She would sit in the sun for really, really long amounts of time. And for a while, like, I suspected that she also was, like, trying to absorb it in a way. You know, like, those people that, like, that claim they don't eat or drink anything. They just sit in the sun and, like, live that way.
I had heard that she'd been treated for scurvy due to her diet. Were you involved in that, or were you around when that happened?
I was not around. She told me about it, and she wasn't diagnosed with it. It was more her own research that she did. And yeah, she said that she was looking up all these symptoms, and it lined up with scurvy more than anything else. And she thought it was hilarious. In a way, and I figured that was also like a coping method of some sort. And that would have happened in December of 2011. Wow. She said it was in the winter time when she was at the shelter.
Wow. Just speaking of the shelter, and were you ever involved with the shelter? Like, were you ever there with Emma, or did you have any connection?
I went there once.
And what was that like?
It was a nice building. There was a big kitchen. I brought her some fish that I had caught, because at that time, this is much later, she was just eating fish, so I caught some fish. Gave her some fish, so she was cooking that, and it was very brief. No place I would want to be or stay.
And now, thinking of a lot of Emma's behavior, like, to somebody on the outside looking in, like, it seems unusual and strange. And to me, like, again, as someone on the outside looking in, I would question either if she had an issue with mental health or involvement with drugs or alcohol. Like, did you know her to have any connection with drug or alcohol abuse?
Not with drug abuse whatsoever, mm-hmm. but definitely with alcohol abuse.
Okay. How did, like, could you describe, like, what you saw or what you experienced with alcohol abuse? Because I haven't heard of this before.
Well, when I was working full time, after she had lost her job, and usually when I'd come home, she was drinking quite a bit of vodka. Olives are another thing she ate, but usually with the vodka. But yeah, she was drinking quite a bit of that every couple of days. There'd be another big bottle in the freezer. And when she was drinking, she was taking a bath, or she would drink a lot and then, like, fall asleep. Every now and then she would get very chatty, but I just figured that she was going through something, but just didn't really think to ask.
But it wasn't like a drinking, like a party kind of thing. This was something she was doing kind of on her own.
Yeah, it was on her own. She was drinking by herself and heavy amounts.
So when you saw this going on, I'm assuming you just assumed, you know, she was, you know, had everything together. And just because when I'm hearing it, like, it sounds like an unusual situation. How did you view Emma and her behavior?
It's a good question. In a way, I was very intimidated by her. Like, she was just very free-spirited in a lot of ways. And I respected that. And I respected her, like, freedom to do what she likes, and that she is an adult and she probably knows best. And, like, she did tell me about some of, like, her travels and some places that she had gone to, and it just all sounded so magical in a way. And I had, and those are things that I wanted to do. But it was also at times that she just seemed very, not on edge, but just, she was trying to comfort herself and she was looking for a safe place. And that was it, and needed her space and her privacy. That was just fine with me. If that makes sense.
And how long was it in total that you lived together for?
About 3 months.
When the end came, what led to you separating or not living together anymore? How did that happen?
Well, we were talking about traveling, and she was telling me about this experience that she had. And this particular story really sticks with me because of when I mentioned it to Shelley, she said that she'd never heard of anything, of her doing anything like that. But she told me that she was living on a mustard farm, and that it had beautiful fields, and it had, and she was living in this house there, and it was sunny and gorgeous, and all these very picturesque details on it. And I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to go traveling and I want to just like go down to California. And then, like, in a very whimsical way, just kind of was like, yeah, I want to go down to California. And she's like, yeah, and just dance on a beach or something. I was like, yeah, I just want to do that. And then she was like, we should do it. And I said, okay. And so I started to get rid of my things and I took it very seriously. And she did as well, but started to fade away from it after some time. And so that was the plan, is that we were going to go traveling together.
Did you have a destination as to where you would go?
Arizona was the initial idea, because of we were hoping to get a van and drive down the West Coast and then go over to Arizona and see the desert and maybe New Mexico and then just find our way back. Just go on an adventure.
And what happened next? I'm assuming this trip didn't materialize.
Well, for her, it didn't. I started looking at vans and like got rid of a lot of my stuff. I moved some of my furniture that I kept at my parents' place. I sold my truck, and I had a cute little truck that, yeah, got rid of. Yeah, I got out of the house, was staying with my parents, and I was going around different car lots looking for affordable vans, and she would buy half and we'd split the cost for it. And she was staying up in Victoria, and she said she was staying with a friend, which I later found out was actually in a hotel that is now closed and had a big fire there. It was a very seedy kind of hotel that was over on Queens.
And it, so as this trip was being planned, you were living separately?
Yes. And like, I had a friend in Victoria who I'd come up and stay with, and she would stay with whoever she was staying with. Yeah, so I was trying to get things together and plan this, and she increasingly, as I started to get more into it, she started to step away from it a whole lot more. And then she proposed, like, oh, well, why don't we just hitchhike? Like, we don't need a van, because I was just like, I can't find a van. Like, there's no good vans out there. And she's like, well, why don't we just hitchhike? We can hitchhike. It'll be fine. Like, I've hitchhiked a lot. And I'm like, yeah, I've hitchhiked a lot too. You know what? That probably could be fine. So I just got a backpack. And then, like, a lot of her things that she had, like, as far as packing goes, like, I went and got, like, a really nice women's, like, Deuter backpack, like, you know, those ones. And she, like, had a big canvas, like, really heavy bag with, like, a lot of scarves on it. And I was like, well, she's doing her thing. Like, I guess if that's what she wants to bring, then that's what she'll bring. But I'm going to have a comfortable backpack. Like, it just didn't seem very organized. And so a few days before we were supposed to leave, she backed out of it. And I went by myself.
So she backed out just, you know, like, days before. How did she tell you? Do you remember?
She just said that she needed to be here and that she came to Victoria and that she wasn't ready to leave it and that she needed to stay.
And you accepted that and you just did the trip on your
own? I was a little bit upset at first. And a bit disappointed, but I also knew it was something that I needed to do with or without her.
And so she stayed behind in Victoria. You left to go, you know, traveling. While you were away, were you still in touch, like emailing or anything like that?
Yep, we were emailing, and I did. I had a friend as well who I introduced her to before I left, who she spent a lot of those months with, who was living in the Inner Harbor on a sailboat. And I would mail to him, and then I'd send her letters too that were just like very whimsical, here I am in San Francisco now kind of things. And then we were also emailing each other, but they were very cryptic emails that were very dreamy and kind of, yeah, that was like a lot of our friendship was like that. It was all like a watercolor painting.
And the tone of the messages you were getting while you were away, did it seem like, you know, everything was just fine with her, or was she, or was it too cryptic and vague to even really understand what was going on?
There were bits and pieces that were pretty straightforward, but a lot of it was kind of like, oh, I will get a, I will hop on a large bird and fly down to see you, like kind of like a children's story in a way. But there were a bit, there was some of them. One of them was about how she was in the library and she had to go because she was frightened of someone there, and she had to go because of the, her time was running out, and that she was in Vancouver staying with a drag queen or something to that effect.
When you were down in the U.S., you did come back to Victoria for a period of time, and I think when you came back from the U.S., you had somebody else with you at this point. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I met someone when I was traveling and brought him back to meet the Fam Jam.
In addition to meeting the Fam Jam, he met Emma. When was this that you would have come back from the U.S.?
It would have been August.
Of 2012?
Yes.
Okay. And when you had reconnected with Emma, what was going on then? Like, did you spend much time with her? And do you know what she was up to?
I wasn't too sure what she was up to. I heard that she was living on a boat. Like, it was very briefly touched down on in the emails. And I wasn't sure, but she didn't make it clear if she was living on it or staying on it. And I just assumed it was our friend's boat. And our friend was working in the Inner Harbor. And he had told me that she was only eating fish. I was surprised by this. And when I asked her about it, she was like, yeah, that's just what my body's asking for. It's like, that's all it needs. And that's just it. That, like, I don't need anything else, just fish. And I was like, well, if that's all your body needs, then I guess like I can't, like, you can't force feed someone other things. And she already had peculiar dietary choices, so I just figured it was another one of those. And she seemed very floaty. Like, she didn't seem as like on her tracks as she was, because of, like, she was always very whimsical and always, but she had this, like, really strong, fierce side to her as well. I felt like when I was seeing her more and when I was living with her, she still had like she could put her shields up and be a tough lady if she wanted to. And she seemed a lot more, I don't want to say fragile, but more fragile. When I was asking her about things, and in her summer, it was all like, it wasn't the same kind of excited way of describing something in the previous, like, poetic expression.
Okay, but so
does
you,
that make sense? So you
did notice some change just in the short period you were away?
Yes, she seemed a lot more distant. There we go. To sum it all up, okay. She seemed a lot more distant.
So you had a bit of time reconnecting in Victoria. You had left Victoria again prior to November.
Yes, I was only in Canada for a couple of weeks before I went with the person that I met to Scotland.
You were in Victoria a few days, reconnected with Emma, went to Scotland for a period of time. Did you,
and then England and all over the place.
Did you reconnect with it, or were you back in Victoria, or did you reconnect with her at all after that?
I sent a few emails. I didn't get a whole lot of returns. I didn't really connect with her when I got back. I only got back shortly before she went missing.
When was it that you got back? Do you recall?
Not exactly, like mid-November.
Okay.
About. And when I got back, I saw her. And that was about it.
I want to interrupt the conversation just briefly before we get into the next clip. As you heard Micah describe, she parted ways with Emma when Micah traveled south to the United States. While traveling, she began a relationship and returned to Victoria briefly to introduce her new partner to her family and friends, including Emma. And from there, she and her partner traveled to Scotland. While in Scotland, there was limited communication with Emma. Now, where I interrupted our talk, Micah was describing her return home to Victoria in mid-November 2012, just days prior to Emma's disappearance. In the next piece I play, Micah will describe the last time she saw Emma. And as you will hear, this is a very troubling encounter, and one that Micah has revisited during many sleepless nights.
Yeah, so I flew back into Seattle from London, and there was a storm, and we had to stop somewhere in the States, and there was delays, and had to stay in Seattle for a little bit before I caught the Clipper back over to Victoria. And I was very, very jet-lagged and very, very tired, and my mom came and picked me up in the Inner Harbor, and I was very sad at the time as well. I was very sad to be leaving England. And then we were driving up Blanchard, and the women's shelter is on the corner of Blanchard and Burdett. And I saw her on the corner near the courthouse, across the, like, near the women's shelter. And she looked like just really sad. Like really, really sad. And she was staring at this murder of crows that was just in front of her. And she looked, it was raining and she was just wet. And my mom, she asked me, oh, look, there's Emma. Like, oh, you must like, you must go see her. Like, do you want to stop so you can go and say hi? And from pure exhaustion, I said, no, I'll just see her another day. And that was the last time I saw her.
Oh. And that would have been just days prior to...
Yeah. Yeah.
And that must be something that you play through in your head constantly, I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's there a lot.
I wanted to include that piece as a separate excerpt of our conversation, as at this point in the talk, Micah had become obviously affected by the emotional weight of that experience. After taking a few moments to pause and collect our thoughts, we continued our discussion, now focusing on the period of time after Emma's disappearance. So we'll get back to Micah now. How did you find out that she actually went missing?
It took me a long time to get over my jet lag, and at the time I was pretty heartbroken as well, and my parents sat me down and told me.
And I assume this was a huge surprise, a shock. Can you tell me about your reaction?
It was actually really terrifying. It was really there were so many things in my head that I didn't know how to really absorb. I still don't know how to absorb it. But then I thought maybe it's only like a couple of days thing, like, cause she just like went off somewhere, like, cause she always talked about like running off to these places in very extravagant ways. And they were very dramatic, and it was always an adventure the way that she would talk about it. And so I was like, well, maybe she just went camping for a little bit, or maybe she just like, and I went through all these possibilities in my head. And then, yeah, I did not accept it for quite some time. I still haven't, like, honestly.
Mm-hmm. After her disappearance, were you involved with the search and, you know, all that was going on with her mother in Victoria?
A little bit here and there, but not as much as a lot of other people. I was going through a lot of personal things at the time as well that were really... Yeah, it was like a snowball. There was an explosion of really unfortunate things just happening. And I got very overwhelmed. And I went up and talked to Shelley a few times, but I wasn't very heavily involved with the search. I was very heartbroken at the time about a lot of different things.
Do you recall your last communication with her?
I don't remember exactly.
No. I'm just wondering if there was ever like a real like red flag or sign that she was in distress and it wasn't
you know, her normal behavior?
They're, like, they increasingly, I do recall, like, getting an email from her, but I don't recall exactly what it said, that it seemed more tense. Like, she just seemed stressed.
Some people think that her behavior leading up to her disappearance would be consistent with someone who was, you know, being stalked or followed. Some people also thought it maybe was just a mental illness leading her to be paranoid. Do you know of any reason why she'd be fearful or?
Not someone in particular, but I definitely suspected that she did have some trauma with someone. But I never asked about it because it seemed like information she was protecting. But yeah, I definitely, yeah, she did have that fear of someone. She was one of those people that was like very, like, so bright that a lot of people would kind of see it and like kind of go towards it, you know, like a moth to a light or something. She, and there were a couple times where I definitely did see her, like, when we were like just out and about, where I did see her like very much defend herself, but when I, like, just in a verbal kind of way, you know, if someone calls out or something. Yeah, she definitely had fear, but I also, like, now reflecting on it, and like maybe it could have been a state of psychosis. Or it could have been some trauma that she had held on to. I honestly didn't really know enough about it. Mm-hmm. And I wish I'd asked more. Mm-hmm. But I never wanted to pry.
Yeah. Looking back on everything now and, you know, all the behavior that you had seen with Emma, do you have any doubt that she was suffering from a mental illness?
No. It does seem like there was something up. I'm not a psychologist, so I can't like diagnose exactly what I saw, but there's probably like a long list of things that could be overdiagnosed to people just by simple little tweaks that they have. So I don't want to like run to anything being like, it could have been this or this or this, but there was a state of like, she seemed like she was in a dream state a lot of the time for the entire time that I knew her. It was like it was a little bit of a different reality.
And you were there during kind of the months leading up to her disappearance, where it seemed like she drifted from a lot of the people that she was really close with. You know, these kind of mysterious months where her behavior really seemed to cross the line into possibly into a crisis type situation. Can you share your thoughts on what you think may have happened or what may have become of Emma?
I have a lot of thoughts about this. Like it's constant. It's always changing. It's always moving as to what a possibility could be. One of them is that she somehow gotten over the border into the States and could be somewhere down there. Another one is that maybe she went out to the East Coast where she could be in a small town like way up north, or she could starved out in like going out into some sort of mountain range. Like if someone picked her up downtown, I don't think that it's impossible that she could have gotten to someone's car if someone was like, hey, like, do you need a ride somewhere? And she'd be like, oh yes, I'm actually going like out to Souk. And then they'd be like, oh well, I'm going that way too, kind of thing. And having her like jump out of the car at some point, or getting out, asking to be let go, like in the middle of nowhere and going into the forest, like without shoes, or just going for a swim in the ocean. Like there is so many possibilities. I have no idea.
And given something, you know, so traumatic, happening in your life with, you know, someone this close to you disappearing, how often is Emma in your mind, and how often are you thinking about this?
Quite often, but I try not to, which I don't know. I don't know. I feel I've never felt so helpless about anything in all of my life. I don't even know how to contribute, and I don't know how to start. So it's not a great, it's a terrible thing. It's not a great thing at all. I don't know. I don't even know how to answer that.
And now for anyone who doesn't know Emma, if you were just to describe the feeling you had being with her, again, you described her as whimsical and, you know, magical and creative and talking like it's a children's novel. It must have just been incredible to spend time with her. Can you just talk a little bit about how you felt with Emma?
I felt it was all just so playful. There was always something really, like, everything to her, in a way, like, whenever she was around, everything around her just seemed like magical in its own way. She, like, one of the first times that we really hung out, we didn't even say anything and we just started laughing, and then it just, like, these are the things I try not to think about, so I'm sorry, Jordan, I'm sorry. I wish there was so much more I could do.
As you just heard, this is a very emotional topic for Micah, and as such, I want to thank her for her willingness to open up and share some memories of her time living with Emma. During my coverage of this story, I've consistently been impressed by the incredible group of friends and family members Emma surrounded herself with. Micah, like Ellen, Michaela, and Julian before her, was willing to do whatever it would take to spread awareness of Emma's plight in hopes the public interest in this case would assist in the search for Emma Filipov. If anyone listening knows Emma personally and would like to share their story with me, please get in touch and I'd be more than happy to speak with you. And if you have any information related to Emma's disappearance, please contact the Victoria Police or reach out to those searching for Emma at helpfindemmafilipov.com. Now with that, I will conclude tonight's episode of the Nighttime Podcast. If you're interested in hearing more content, please check out the Nighttime Patron Group, where for $1 a month, you'll have access to the supporter-exclusive bonus content. You can join by visiting patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. On behalf of myself and the show's listeners, I'd like to thank the continued support of the current patrons and welcome the newest members to the group, Josepha, Alice, Morgan, Shane, and Kelly. Without you all, the production of the show would be impossible. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Nighttime Podcast. If you enjoy your time here, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on whichever podcast platform you use. Positive reviews are something I take great pride in. A recent reviewer named You're Making Me Sick had this to say about the show. I love the unusual things that make you think a little deeper. The Nighttime Podcast does just that. Jordan has a great way of presenting things that are a little off the beaten path and letting you come to your own conclusions. So if you're listening to this, You're Making Me Sick, send me an email with your address and I'd be happy to send you a small token of my gratitude. To stay up to date, you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, where I use the handle @NighttimePod. If you have any story ideas or feedback on the show, I'd love to hear from you at nighttimepodcast@gmail.com. So until next time, keep looking around and let me know if you see anything weird.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.